We're going to be in Psalm 127 and 128. You can turn there. And I've been given the task of talking through, preaching through, the idea of blessings of ministry. Pastor talked about last week the idea of training children. Go ahead, guys, if you have, if you need extra outlines, they are here for you. There were some in the bulletins, but if you don't have one. The pastor talked about training and training children and how important of a task that was. And so today, talking about blessings foundation and blessings of ministry kind of piggybacks on that idea. And there, these two sermons may sound a little bit similar, except for the fact that pastor said that he felt like he was in a fight last week. And I'm going to feel a little bit like that, except for the fact that there is a resolution. There is blessing in ministry. And there's blessing of doing things right in your life. Is there not? There is blessing in that. And there is no doubt that whether you're a believer or not, you see those things. About 6.05 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Wednesday, August 1st, 2007, the eight-lane, 1,907-foot stretch of I-35, a main highway that passes over the Mississippi in the Minneapolis area, experienced a catastrophic failure in the main span of the deck truss. As a result, 1,000 feet of the deck truss collapsed, with about 465 feet of the main span falling 100 feet or 108 feet into the 15-foot deep river. A total of 111 vehicles were on the portion of the bridge that collapsed. Of these, 17 were recovered from the water. As a result of the bridge collapse, 13 people died and 145 people were injured. I don't know if you remember that story that went nationwide, in fact, probably internationally. Why? Just because of the issues there. But I remember that coming over the news feed, the evening news when I was watching that. I remember watching and seeing the bridge actually in the water, the Mississippi there in Minneapolis. That bridge was very old, and it was under construction. They were going to fix some of the foundations. I am reading actually from the report that the Minnesota DOT actually gave out after this bridge collapse, and you can find it online, but it is extremely telling of this idea of foundations. And may I suggest that if you are to have blessing in your life, you have to have, it's imperative that you have foundations that are properly set, footings that are deep. Let me read what was found, at least preliminarily, of the issues. They said that there was insufficient or lack of bridge design, that the quality control of the bridge and its components had a lack of safety measures and provisions. The bridge owners, which I did not know the bridge had owners, but they had owners, had a lack of guidance in properly maintaining and keeping the bridge safe. When it came to all kinds of components of this, there was a lack of inspection, lack of fortification under certain points, lack of, and the list goes on and on. The pastor talked about the fact that we need to train our children, and that is absolutely 100% correct. We do. But in this text, we see that there is both blessing and there is vanity. And I would suggest to you that in these, blessing comes to those who have children. We can recognize that in 127, where Solomon, as he writes this, talks about that. He says in verse 3, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward, a blessing." In 128, verse 1, notice it's a larger statement to everyone. It says, "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways." Verse 2 of that same chapter, "You will eat the fruit of your labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you." The definition of blessing as I see it is this. It's the approval that allows or helps you to do something. Help and approval from God. Or something that helps you or brings happiness. We actually can see this in the text here. We don't need Webster to tell us that. But other words or maybe keywords that come alongside of this is the idea of approval or encouragement. But then there's also a definition of vanity. Vain. What does it mean to be vain? Too proud of your own appearance, abilities, and achievements? Having no success. And I like this particular end of this one. Not producing a desired result. So whatever you've done, because you haven't had a great foundation, you cannot have a great result. It will not happen. Here's some other words that are used to identify what vanity or vain, doing something in vain. It's idle. It's worthless. It's unsuccessful. It's useless. It's foolish. It's silly, conceited, and even blasphemous. And that word comes from Deuteronomy 5:11, where we note that it's Moses' word says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain." It's a blasphemous thing. A similar word is used in Psalm 127, where at the beginning of this psalm, he says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain." He uses the word vain three times in that section. I would have you know that blessings are built on firm and planned foundations. And blessings are results of something larger than you or I. And blessings are complements and companions of submission and obedience. True blessing comes from carried out submission and obedient work, where you actually obey. What parent doesn't know this well? Your kid obeys, and you're ready to bless them. I mean, it could be a bednight snack, it could be a pat on the back, it could be Disneyland. I don't know what you bless your kids with, but when your kids are acting well, isn't it easy to bless them? Is it not? So the Heavenly Father looks at us, His children, and wouldn't it be nice for Him to bless us? This is not prosperity gospel, folks. This is simplicity of the word. Because in Psalm 128, it says, blessing comes to everyone who fears the Lord. There's a proper context of that. I have some pictures up here that I would like you to see of poor planning. Yeah, honey, I'll build a deck. I got this. Oh, that's right. There's a railroad. The ATM, that's a little high. Who did this? You've got 10 square feet and 7 or 8 manholes. Can you imagine driving down that road? And by the way, this is not Fond du Lac, okay? At least I don't think so. This one's good. Can you imagine being the people who are finishing the deck on that one, the railing or the stucco? Did you bring your rappelling gear? We can't get through the building. We're just going to have to rappel. This is great. Oh. Welcome home to the telephone pole. I cannot get over this one, okay? Because it's a hotel chain and because we have this hotel chain in Fond du Lac, you can kind of see that. It's not the Holiday Inn, Gene, okay, Beth? It's not the Holiday Inn. But can you imagine being the construction workers on this one as well? You know, just looking at the row, you can eyeball it pretty good. But I would suggest that whoever was on the window duty that day had some major problems. This is great. Here's a ramp. I'm going to give a wheelchair accessibility except for the last 3 stairs. We got this. I know Ted Haynes, you would never do this. And Mercury, your designing over there is not even close to this ignorant. Here's an escalator. Oh, this is my kind of mall. This is what it feels like to a dad who sends their daughters to the mall. Just go down the escalator and just hit a wall, right? Go up to the 2nd floor. Well, can't do that. This one was on Facebook. This is what kind of sparked my idea of poor planning and poor foundation work. Can you imagine being these guys? The cranes have all set this huge, huge bridge, and you're in the middle of some massive water body, and you realize that, whoops, we're off by like 4 lanes. I don't know who the owners of that bridge are. probably a problem. This is my favorite. Here's the garage on the second floor, bringing construction to a whole new level. Dave Robbie would never do this. No, none of us would. Doesn't this epitomize poor planning? Like, honey, I'm going to jump the car into the second story every night. I'm going to put this car in the garage. I'm going to make this happen. Come on. Seriously, poor planning. I wonder how many of us in our lives really, and maybe just individually first, have done some poor planning. We're building things that we think look good. We're putting ourselves out there in our lives as we think it looks and should be. But really, the planning is horrible. Or maybe it should be foundations. Maybe we should look at that. Because, again, without planning, without proper foundations, blessings, really? No, it's actually vanity. That's what you get. Foundations really are the start of the project. Those who spend great time and energy in designing and constructing the base of a building or an idea set themselves up for countless blessings. The converse is also true, in that if very little attention is given to the foundation, then the project's outcome will be very much in question and will not be in a position to achieve its intended designed use. The project will have been pursued in vain rather than celebrated in blessing. There's several stories of improper foundational work that I have come up with, and I have purposely done them with construction buildings. I could have gone, and I did. I actually did a study of people who have had poor planning in their lives and fell to either financial destruction or moral failure. And instead of doing that, I want to shift to maybe just the picture of buildings, okay? Because I'm going to hit you hard enough, I think. And maybe I should say it this way. I was hit hard enough looking at this and studying this idea that it was easy for me to make the bridge connect between my conviction and where God wants me to be instead of having it separated. Tower of Pisa, you all know this. It leans. Do you know that during construction of the Tower of Pisa, before the construction, that there was very little soil sampling done in that area? It leans, or it had leaned, at an angle of 5.9 degrees, hence the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Because of recent attempts, they have been able to decrease that to only 3.9. They didn't do the foundational work of studying the soil. Tacoma Narrows Bridge. You remember that bridge that just wobbled until it snapped? It did that from a 40-mile-an-hour wind. We get 40-mile-an-hour winds here. Can you imagine if 40-mile-an-hour winds hits this building and it topples over? Well, they didn't do the engineering work of, we're going to see if the frequency of the wind matches the frequency of the iron, because both can have similar ones, and when it did, it vibrated to the point where the bridge was completely done. You all would say probably NASA gets it right all the time, the Hubble telescope. Do you know that one mirror in the middle of that telescope was faulty and that it cost the U.S. taxpayer $6 billion to fix? Poor planning and poor foundational work. There's a complex in China, an apartment building, 2009. The whole building fell over like Legos, because they forgot to completely secure the foundation to three major foundations. They just didn't connect them. New York City crane, 2008. The builders decided that to save money and to not have to go buy four more straps, they strapped this crane with four straps that were notably frayed, and you could see the actual fraying material that was on the straps. Oh, it's okay, they said. We'll be able to get it without a problem. We'll still be able to build four straps. It fails. Killed seven people on the ground. There's a department store in South Korea where developers built it with the idea of having apartments. They decided, because they knew they weren't going to get it filled or occupied, that they were going to change it into a mall. So what they did was they hired a bunch of engineers to come in and put escalators and elevators in. And three firms came in and said, you can't do that. The building will collapse. Guess what the developers did? Fired all three of those until they found one that said, we'll do that. They put it in. 2 years later, 502 people died, 1,500 people were injured in a complete collapse of the building. Willow Island Cooling Tower, 1778. 51 workers died because they were off schedule. They needed to go faster. And they gave them smaller bolts to put in because they had them in stock, but they weren't the rigidity and the strength that needed the tower needed. And so the tower collapsed. 51 people died. There's many more that I could give you. Well, why did they fail? Same reason I-35 bridge over Mississippi failed. Lack of foundation, lack of planning, lack of detail, lack of a contingency plan, lack of inspection, lack of care, lack of integrity, lack of considering the cost of what if we are not doing this correct? Solomon uses three pictures, and I want you to take your attention to Psalm 127, 1 through 3. He says, unless the Lord builds the house, those who labor or build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain that you rise up early and go to rest late, eating the bread of anxious toil. For he gives his beloved sleep. The obvious point to this in the first picture of building the house is that one should not just build a home to have a home, but rather build a home where God is easily seen. Let me just stop here for a moment and just say this. Parents, as your kids walk into your house, is he easily seen or do they have to go looking for him? You may have a Bible on your table or some nice things in the bookshelf, but do they see God in you? Is your character and the planning of your home built around the fact that they can see God all over the place? They do not have to go seeking for God in your own home. About guarding the city. Solomon says it's vain for somebody to guard the city unless God guards it. Maybe looked at protecting your house. To protect or guard those around you is needed, especially in today's day and age. But if your protection, is your protection present because you see the attacks of the devil, or is it simply to protect your earthly assets? I think far too many of us look at the things and toys we have is far more important than the things spiritual that are in our homes. How about the daily routine, the work? You get up early, go to bed late. Why are you doing this routine? I know that moms sometimes get exasperated. Amber worked last night late trying to get things taken care of. In the morning, she was up at 5:30 trying to get everything ready to go for this morning, and she was still out late. And it wasn't because she didn't do her work. You know what it was? Why? Because I didn't help her, to be honest with you. I didn't help her. Daily work routine is important and absolutely necessary to keep up with our current Western lifestyle. However, are we working 65 to 80 hours a week because we can contribute more to the cause of Christ and future of our families, or are we working these hours to plan the ease of our retirements? I believe Solomon wants us to see that doing these things are worthy tasks. However, I can do worthy tasks in vain. I can put my kids into your Sunday school classes, Sunday school teachers, without the follow-through of a dad where it needs to be. I can send my kids to camp, Christian camp, for what? A week of ease without kids? Sometimes that's what parents think. How about those of you who are retired? You don't have work to go to. I know you have work. I understand. What's it for? So I can do worthy things. I can guard a city. I can build a house. I can get up and go to bed late. And it's still vanity. It still can be in vain. So that means we have to have a purpose for which we do these things. I would suggest that most of us have misguided thinking and doctrine and biblical positions about this. I believe Solomon wants us to see that doing these things are worthy tasks. However, we can do it with little or no success. Results of these tasks and ministries can only become blessings if God is my motivation, and if God is my foundation, if God is my desire, and if God is my focus. And not last but least, but God is bigger to me than everything or anything else on this earth. He gives the first two verses and he says these three things are vain: building the house, guarding the city, getting up, going to bed late, getting up early, going to bed late. And then verse 3 seems to be like, here's the awe moment. And he says, behold. Those of you who have, I think, a King James, is it see? I don't remember if it's see. Those of you who are carrying King James, see or behold. In your notes I have that this word that is behold is kind of like, now, you've got the wisest man writing this, so sit down and listen now, or after all, or look. See, behold is how the ESV and the New King James, I think, translates it. And it's the idea of see, or now, or indeed, surely, after all, look. Children are a heritage from the Lord. They're a blessing. How did we go from building a house, guarding the city, and getting up early, going to bed late? Because all those tasks we do on almost a daily basis. We help maintain our homes. The maintaining of the church was fantastic yesterday. I was out mowing the lawn, and I could smell Lysol outside. I knew there was some cleaning being done. Holy cow. It was great. Saw a guy on the sidewalk faint. No, just kidding. There's building of the house. There's maintaining of things. There's protection that you need to give your family. There is the guarding, if you will. And there is mundane tasks. Why you got to get up and go to bed, get up early, go to bed late. But is it for something? Solomon says, behold, children are a heritage of the Lord. The idea here is that it's a portion or a gift. Literally, a portion or share assigned to you by God. That's who your children are. They're assigned to you specifically. The other idea of heritage is this portion. So we're given, we're supposed to say, okay, look, see now, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. They are given to us from God. Okay, so what do we do with this? Well, later on in this text, I want you to drop down, if you would, to the fourth verse. He says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Family Life CEO, I think, the guy that's in charge, Dennis Rainey, wrote an article where he gave the idea of crafting arrows 101. You can go on his website, you can find this, and it's a very good read. It's not very long. He identifies four parts of the arrow, and I, as I kind of went through this, I researched arrows, and I'm not prolific in this. In fact, it's funny because I have a bow that my brother bought me 2 years ago, and I still don't have any arrows. The bow's worthless without an arrow. I mean, what are you going to do? Throw the bow at the deer? You know, gotcha. He calls these children arrows, like in the hand of a warrior. There are four parts of it. There's a shaft, there's a fletching, there's a nock, and there's a point. The idea of a shaft, and on the back of your notes, I actually have a picture, if you will, and if you want to write these on those, that'd be great. If you don't need to, that's fine, but I'm giving you license to doodle in service here. Let's look at the shaft first. This is a reed, or this is a stick, that has been crafted in a very straight pattern. It takes time, and especially if you are in Old Testament times, arrow making was not easy. And it wasn't, let me just say, it's not that it wasn't easy. It wasn't easily reproducible. You had to craft every single arrow by itself, which means that the preparation and the planning and the type of wood, the foundation that it came from, had to be great. And the idea here that the child's identity is this shaft. who they are in Christ. And identity brings three things: spiritual identity, it brings emotional identity, and sexual identity. Who are you? This is who you are. This is the shaft that God has peeled away and crafted in a straight way so that you can be a weapon. The fletching, which would be the feathers here. What does fletching do in an arrow? Well, as you read about arrows, really the fletching kind of stabilizes the arrow. As it's let go, those feathers, the way the air is coming at it, it stabilizes it so it can't move from the back end. Because if the arrow on the back end moves, what happens to the point? It tumbles. It's useless. There's no direction. Or maybe there's a direction, but it goes nowhere towards the intended target. The fletching, the feathers are of a child's character. How are you molding your children's character? I can tell you, if your child has no character, there's not a lot of blessing that comes out of that. Fletching provides stability and direction and helps the arrow become accurate. The nock. This is perhaps the favorite part of the arrow that I enjoyed learning about. And this has to do with where the arrow connects to the string. The string provides all the power. That's Christ. That nock, if it is not locked into that string, I would suggest to you that the arrow is, again, useless. But the nock is where relationships happen. It's where the connection happens. It's the connection and the power that is there. And as he says, arrows in the hand of a warrior. It wasn't arrows in the hand as toys. This is a powerful illustration. There is a fight, and Pastor was right. But if you do the fight right and you craft the individual, the child, correctly, becomes a weapon and it becomes a blessing. The nock is where the arrow connects to the string. This is the point on the arrow where the power is transferred. With a failing nock, that little section that holds the arrow to the string, a failing nock, the arrow will not have power. Some people have really, really straight shafts, great points, but no nock. You shoot that arrow, where does it go? It might slip off the string and land right next to the warrior. Maybe I should say it this way. As you let your child go and you've pointed them to the direction they should go spiritually with all those identities that were talked about as far as the shaft, and you let it go and it's supposed to fly and it lands next to you as a parent, wow. It's tough to swallow, but you had the pieces to put together this arrow. The point. We would call this in hunting lingo the broadhead, if you will. Point is the part that will determine the precision of the target. A teen who is aimless and has no reason to live has never had work done on the point of their life. Heart and mind were never taught that there is an ultimate purpose for these rules and regulations. The whole idea of an arrow is that it not only hit a target, but also penetrate it. Those of you who are hunters, and all of you can identify with this, what if the DNR put out a new season, a new hunting season, and it was Nerf deer season? All of you guys who hunt, you get up in your tree stands, I can just picture it. Brian Abel, you know, up there with his Nerf gun, all in camo, decked out. He's got his Nerf gun. Deer comes by, boom, hits the deer. The deer scampers off, and Brian texts me and says, "You would never believe it. I got it. I hit it with a Nerf bullet." I'd be like, what? Blessing in that? I think not. How ridiculous is it that some of us, and I would say some of us, and we've all been there before, we hunt with Nerf guns as opposed to the gun deer season or the archery season with precision instruments that are designed for one purpose. So, the application is this. We demand precision in every other facet of our life, but what about spiritually? We demand precision that our refrigerators work and that when we turn the oven on to a certain temperature, that that's the temperature it goes to. And if it doesn't, we get ticked. The dishwasher doesn't work and clean the dishes. There's either something wrong with the dishwasher or the detergent. My furnace decided not to work again for the second time this year. I am ticked about it. And what do? My immediate response is call the company. They've got a junk product in my house. I paid lots of money for this thing. It's their fault. What if it was some simple maintenance things that I probably should have done? Like, from what I understand, if you have a very wet basement, more condensation can build up in the furnace than is supposed to. And so when I call, they go, "Do you have a dehumidifier down there?" "Yes, I do. Is it on?" "No, it's not." Kind of like saying, "Do you have a bow and arrow? Do you have arrows? And is your quiver full of them?" "Yes, I do." "Are they ready to shoot?" You say, "No, they're not. No, they're not." It's vanity to do all this work with your family. For what? So vanity is this: to have children, family, don't craft them. You have headache, sorrow, and blame. Blessing is you've been assigned children, the right children, your children. You craft and refine them based on biblical principles, and they become blessings as well as weapons with a purpose. Psalm 128, 1-2, this next chapter says this: "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You will be blessed, and it shall go well with you." I love the next two verses. "Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table." Can you imagine this afternoon saying, "Hello, beautiful vine," to your wife? "Hello, little olive shoot," to your kids? They wouldn't have a clue. What happened to Dad? "Yeah, I'm a little wacky. I'm a little nuts." And unfortunately, I have read and meditated on Psalm 127 and 28 a little too much the last 2 weeks. But that's exactly the idea. That we have crafted and we have built our home, not in vain, but in blessing. We guard and protect our children from watching the garbage that's out there. We protect, and it's not in vain because we have a purpose. We have a foundation, and we know what the foundation is. We get up early, we go to bed late because we're trying to do something larger than for just me. And he says, "Blessed is the man who fears the Lord." A fear, a beautiful reverence, a deep respect and awe of the Lord. Look at verse 4 of chapter 128 and notice the word that starts out again. And he says, "Behold," again, see, look. As we defined it earlier, "thus shall a man be blessed who fears the Lord." There's no way we can get out of seeing that blessing comes with a strong link to Christ. If you fear the Lord, you will be blessed. Anywhere in here does it say monetarily? Does it say money will happen because of this fearing the Lord? No. You know what the blessing is a lot of times for the warrior? Simply in this: they've defeated the enemy for a larger cause. Spoils of war come, yes, but not immediately. So I don't know what it is with your family. I don't know what it is with you. But we need to be crafting arrows. We need to be working on our foundations. And unlike I-35 and all those other ridiculously planned pictures and the things that we see that just crumble, we need to give more, and I need to give more attention to the details of my home and life. Because if I don't, blessings won't come. I want you to notice one more thing. In verse 6, the final verse of 128, he says this, May you see your children's children. How many of you, by raise of hands, have grandchildren? Can I see your hands for a second? When you have grandkids, yeah, I already see the smiles. I don't even have to ask the question. Grandkids are wonderful things. And I've learned this from my dad having grandkids, in that they come for a little while and they go away. You can give them back. Aren't grandkids blessings, though? When you have that child that is your child's. And even more of a blessing is this, when you know that the shaft, the fletching, and the knock, and the point, and the foundations of family are being implanted into that child so that they will become a blessing to their family, their dad, as he has them in his quiver, ready to let fly in an aggressive manner towards the devil. All these kids that ran out of here and the kids that are sitting in here, you guys are weapons. May I suggest this? Part of your training is you acting like it. If your parents are not causing you to aggressively be inspected, to be held accountable, to not be put together with smaller bolts, if you will. And you think, what is this for, Dad? Why do I have to do this? And Dad, you don't crumble under that pressure. You continue to tighten those bolts because you do not know the weight that they will endure. But you do know this. God calls us to not build in vain, in worthlessness.